If everyone has lemonade stands, I think we can do it. These inspiring words were expressed by Alex Scott, the little girl who was battling childhood cancer and decided to have a lemonade stand in her own backyard to help fundraise for a cure. In honor of Alex and everyone fighting this disease, join S&T Bank June 1st through the 8th at all bank branches for Lemonade Days. Enjoy treats and activities. Help us support research, awareness, and hope for these children and families in need. Let's make people our purpose and build a brighter future together. S&T Bank, member FDIC.
This is In the Locker Room with Wolf and Starks on Fox Sports Pittsburgh and Steelers Nation Radio, presented by your neighborhood Ford store. The F-150 is the official truck of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
All right, top of the hour, and guess what? No Wednesday is complete without it being at least one final WEX Wednesday inside the locker room. That's right. We got Steel City Insider Editor-in-Chief, Mr. Jim Wexel. Also,
guys, I can't hear
the author. He can't hear anything, Wes. But make sure
Should be good now.
Okay. All right. So we got Steel City Insider Editor-in-Chief and also the author himself. Not the Arthur, but the author. And his name is the one, the only Mr. Jim Wexel. How are we, Jim?
Hey, Mac. You know, instead of editor-in-chief, you can just call me chief.
Okay. All right. The chief. Chief. Jim Wexel.
I came across the origin of the chief's nickname, right? And it was assumed, it was thought, and many stories were written that one of the kids called him chief because of the guy on the Superman series. The head of the newsroom?
Perry, newsroom? Was it Perry? What's his name?
Perry. It was Chief. Yeah, they called him Chief.
Yeah, that's right.
But in Rooney's bio, it said that actually one of the kids, the first use of Chief was he was contemplating buying a minor league pro soccer team, bringing it to Pittsburgh. And the one son was telling the other sons, Chief says no to soccer. And so that's when he started to be called Chief, because he said no to owning a soccer team. I forget what year. It might have been late 50s, early 60s, something like that.
That's really
cool. Anyway,
that's
why I have the chief on my mind. And when Max said editor-in-chief, call me Perry.
Perry Wexel. There we go.
Perry something or other, yeah.
Indeed. Wex, let me ask you, what do you think of what we think is the Arthur Smith hiring? I mean, it's official now. So what do we think?
It's not well received in town, is it?
Really? I don't know. Twitter's
a cesspool. And, Ron Cook has come out and bashed it with Joe Starkey. Those guys are crushing it. And a bunch of radio guys are crushing it because it's now, how's it going to help Kenny? You know, this guy's not a quarterback guru. And, we talked about Cliff Kingsbury and those of his ilk. I like the fact that, I saw the Atlanta offense 2 years ago when they played the Steelers. The Steelers beat them, but I liked, and I remember watching Atlanta leading up to that game, and I really liked their running game and the uniqueness of it. And, well, of course, Cordarrelle Patterson was very unique.
Right.
He was a wide receiver and running back.
Good point.
And very legit at both. So I remember that offense. It reminded me of what Mike Mularkey used to call his offense, exotic smash mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's passing, but basically a running team and utilizing different concepts and methods, uniqueness in the running game. And to Cordarrelle Patterson, I thought that was a really good running game. And then he drafted a running back to get a legit running back, and that guy didn't pan out, or the team didn't pan out. I don't know if it was Bijan Robinson didn't pan out or what, but Arthur Smith took a lot of the blame for the three consecutive 7-10s.
Right.
And people are look at him as some kind of loser, whereas I didn't want them to hire an experienced offensive coordinator who had been fired. He was available because he had been fired. Otherwise, you're not going to get somebody to make a lateral move. So to get an offensive coordinator with experience, you would have to get a failed one. Well, I'd rather have a failed head coach.
Right.
And go back to his comfort zone of coordinating the way Dick LeBeau did in 2004.
Oh, that's a great
Remember
point.
Remember Dick LeBeau's last season as a head coach? 2-14. Capped off 3 years of 12-33. Good thing the Steelers didn't say, yeah, this guy's been a losing head coach. We can't have him coordinating the defense. So
that's a great
point. I think it's a great analogy to this guy, because this guy had a great offense in Tennessee, especially with, Ryan Tannehill was a journeyman. Matt Steele wrote about this today on our site. And he was a journeyman, but man, he had his best years. And he had A.J. Brown running slants. And Matt wondered if George Pickens can start doing what A.J. Brown did in Tennessee. And Derrick Henry, of course. The Steelers don't have Derrick Henry. But Najee's always been called Derrick Henry Light.
Yes.
Or Junior or something. Even at Alabama, they were both Alabamans.
Yep.
So he's had that comparison. Now he gets this. He's not Derrick Henry. Nobody is.
No.
Except maybe the great Earl Campbell. But so those offenses were really good. They averaged over 30 points a game.
And by the way, I have to announce, I got to, just because you brought it up, you brought up the great Earl Campbell. Well, we're going to have on the guy who boned the great Earl Campbell, hit him with one of the greatest hits in the history of the NFL. That would be the great Donnie Schell, is going to be on the show tomorrow at 10:20. So I just had to throw that out there, Wex. Sorry. Okay.
Well, let me throw this out there. I just wrote that story. I'm at the 1978 season in my book, The History of the Steelers, that I told you I was having such trouble starting. Well, once I started, I couldn't stop. So I'm up to 1978 already, and I just wrote the Donnie Schell. I called the chapter Torpedo.
Oh, yes, yes.
Because that's exactly what he did to Earl Campbell there.
Oh, my goodness. That was just an unbelievable hit. My goodness. We'll bring that up tomorrow with Donnie, that's for sure.
How many years would he have been suspended for that hit if he had done it now?
Oh, man.
That was in the ribs, though. But, Mike Wagner caused that whole thing because he came up and tried to make the tackle on Campbell running around end.
Oh, yeah.
Campbell spun out of that tackle and was exposed as he came out of his spin. And that's when Schell just
dropped the bomb on him.
Dropped the bomb on him.
Boy, that was a hit.
So, better than the Daz Band.
back to the offensive coordinator. Just let me finish this one thing about the exotic smash mouth. I thought of Malarkey back then when I was watching Atlanta. And I always heard, because Malarkey was followed up by Wisenhunt in Pittsburgh, and they were both tight ends coaches, that tight ends coaches make ideal offensive coordinators because they have to marry the pass and run game, and they know about each. And that's what Arthur Smith, that's his specialty. He was a tight ends coach for like 5 years under Munchak, I believe, at Tennessee. And then he worked his way up and became the coordinator. And I believe he worked for Wisenhunt and then Malarkey too. So, I mean, I like this suits the talent level on the team. This guy's going to do a lot of 12 personnel. He's going to utilize his running backs. And he's got George Pickens to do the A.J. Brown thing. So I have to like it. I've heard all the arguments. Everybody wanted a passing game guru. But, I don't know that the Steelers are built for that. You want a passing game guru, and at the same time you're criticizing Kenny Pickett. Why are you going to highlight a guy that you don't think is good. That's what the critics of this offensive coordinator hire are trying to do. They're trying to take both sides of this argument. I think you want to minimize the passing game until you got that franchise guy. So this running game will help. We saw what it did for Mason Rudolph, and it will help Kenny Pickett. And you're just not going to have that high-flying. You're not going to have Patrick Mahomes' offense because you don't have Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. No, I think that's what you kind of have to be on top of, right, is that, you know, where are we at? And I think that's the critical look at is, okay, what does our personnel look like right now? And what would be best for us to maximize this personnel so that, you know, if you are talking about making some tweaks, there's only so many draft picks and only so many free agents you can bring in this process, right? So how can we do more with what we have and minimize what we have to bring in, and we can focus on just major areas versus trying to recalibrate everything or make tweaks everywhere. Let's just try and focus on the bigger key items, right? You know, is this a year where you're going interior offensive line? Is this a year where you're going, you know, to bolster linebacking even more in the draft? Or are you going more defensive line help in the draft? Or are you going for another safety in the draft? Like, you can only pick so many things to hit. And so look at the offensive side. Yeah, what were you about to say?
Well, I have a feeling that is, and I agree with all those positions of need. And my philosophy is to take value at any of those many positions, take the best value in the first round. But I tell you, and Ray Fittipaldi wrote about this, they're really scouting the offensive linemen, and I really think they're going to finish that job of finishing this offensive line, because it will help the new coordinator, who in turn will help the head coach who has to justify this hiring. The angry mobs are out there. They wanted a little smart genius guy who studies his analytics. And they instead got the big boy. He was a college lineman, and he is a tight ends coach. And it seems like he plays exotic smash mouth, and I think that's interesting. I love creative running games. You know, the 49ers are a great running team, too.
Right. No question.
And Detroit.
Yeah.
And Detroit and the Ravens. I mean, three of the four finalists really could run the ball.
That's it. So, it's a common thing, right? I mean, you want the best.
It's not out of vogue.
No. Here's my thought, Wex. Number one is the best way you can help a Kenny Pickett or Mason Rudolph is to give him a solid running game week in, week out that is capable of taking over a game such as what he ran down Tennessee. And I understand Derrick Henry. I understand the offensive line and all that stuff. But the elements to having that successful run game are all here. And I still think more of a tight end oriented, sometimes going 12 personnel, sometimes with a fullback. And I would say, Connor Hayward, get on the squat machine, baby. Put the, you know, the barbell on your back. Get some weight on there. Get them ham hocks built up, and let yourself be one of those lead guys on a lead. Oh man, go up an ISO and just whack a mole playing with those linebackers. To me, I'd love to see that. That's Northeastern football. That's December football. That's playoff football capabilities right there.
And it's not just the 1970s calling. It's just not.
No.
Physical football will never go out of style, ever. It revolves. And when everybody was picking small defensive linemen and getting rid of their nose tackles and getting rid of their fullbacks and getting quicker on defense, I saw this coming. Power running games are going to come back because you have to have the physical force to meet it. So, you know, defenses have gotten a little too – hey, the Steelers are a little too fast without their nose tackle. You know, they worry about getting more speed on the field than anything else, and their run stats haven't been real pretty the last, I don't know, ever since LeBeau left. So, you know, running it does come back around, especially
no doubt.
If you get too light. Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think You present some really good points, Wex, where I think, you know, a lot of people don't really consider that. And like I said, I've been going back and forth with it personally. And I was like, well, I know what I need to revert back to, and that's watching film, right? Watch how the Titans operated, how they looked those years where Arthur Smith was at the head, to really get a better grasp of this. And I'm not afraid to admit that I can't tell you off the top of my head. You know, I know what the numbers said. I know what the in-season stats look like. But for me, you know, I want to see in-game operation. I want to see the more nuanced aspects of it, really focus in on it.
Did you watch yet?
A good idea. No, I haven't done that yet. No, I'm prepping I'm prepping for Super Bowl week, since I got a full week of media row. Hosting. So I'm like, unfortunately, I have not. And this news dropped yesterday, so I was like, I have a whole off season. I'll probably start talking about it more as we get to doing the combine coverage. That'll fall into my purview of making sure I'm on top of that, because that'll also determine who are we really looking at to bring in. You know, whether offensively or defensively. So I'm going to take a deeper dive, because I need to spend like, you know, 4 or 5 days just watching film to get a better feel for it.
Okay, well, then I'll call you and get a cheap column where I don't have to do the
thinking.
There
you go.
Now he's thinking.
Hey,
yeah, those are the best columns.
Speaking of a cheap column here, let me ask you, Wex, what's your view on the Senior Bowl stuff? What's kind of piqued your interest, if you've had any chance to talk to anybody or get a look at anything going out in the Senior Bowl?
Well, I've just published what my guy Roy Countryman has written about the Senior Bowl, and he's going to file reports out of the practices. So I'll be looking forward to what he has to say. One thing that caught my eye was the Tennessee quarterback, big, strong arm, mobile, real raw, but real physical, a potential third-round pick, something like that, be interesting. A lot of offensive linemen down there. There's a linebacker from NC State also that Roy was raving about. And he said the problem with him is many injuries. I think both ACLs. And he compared it to TJ. It was like when TJ came out, everybody looked at the medicals and said, ugh. And that's allowed him to fall to number 30. And do we worry about TJ's knees today? I mean, I haven't. There's other things, the pec, whatever else hurt him. But this guy, his name escapes me. He's an NC State linebacker, very athletic, but with medical questions. That's an interesting guy. And there's offensive linemen. There's a Penn State cornerback who was Joey Porter's teammate last year as a potential first rounder, Kalen King. Very interesting. I'm sure you've watched him play. If you watch Joey play at Penn State, they manned those two positions. And I remember talking to the Penn State coaches, and they said, I said, hey, thanks for the interview. He goes, hopefully we can do it again next year.
That's a pretty good hint right there.
Yeah, well, I'm going to remember. Remember me? Remember you said we'd do this again? Well, Kalen King, what do you tell me about him? So those are some interesting guys off the top of my head. I'm also looking at centers. I know the West Virginia center is down there, but he's still rehabbing. He's down there working and meeting. He's a football junkie. This is a second round type guy, very physical center. And there's another really physical center at Oregon that might have to go in the first round.
Jackson Powers Johnson. I was looking at that guy this morning. Yeah. One thing I like about him, he's got a touch of the mean about him when you watch him play a little bit. He's got some violence.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that.
So yeah. And
you don't get that out of many centers unless they're named Marquise Pouncey.
Well, the WVU. Check out the WVU kid, too.
Okay.
I think you'll see some physical, very raw, big physical guy. So, interesting. And wouldn't that look good? I mean, you know, Mason Cole is serviceable and could be the guy who is the bridge to the rookie. I don't know how many years Mason has left on his contract, but I can still see him starting. And whether he holds on to his job is up to him. But having the rookie not have to play that first game, I remember Pouncey, it was so difficult. And I remember trying to interview Pouncey the week before his start, and he's like, come on, man, I can't talk right now. I got too much on my mind. I mean, this was a man who was thinking about his playbook, right?
Yep, yep.
And if you ever interviewed Marquise Pouncey, Max, you know, he's a gregarious guy, very easy to get along with. But, man, when he was getting ready for that first week to be a rookie starting center, he was a little bit harried.
Yeah, well, hey, I was on that line with him when he made that first start. Yeah, you were like, all right. I mean, because here's the thing. You remember – because I remember when he earned that role. That was the New York Giants. We were in New York playing in a preseason game. And he came in, I want to say, like third or fourth series of the game, and starters were still in. And I just remember that first play. We had an outside toss, and it was toss crack actually to my side, to the left, right? So I'm running on the outside. I look out the corner of my eye. Now, mind you, he had a backside he had a not a slip. Oh, gosh, what's the block called? I forgot what it's called between the center and the guard. I can't remember right now. An A backside A block, right?
Okay.
He hit the nose, the backside linebacker, and by the time I was in the alley – he was already up on the safety. He hit three people in that span. And we were like, well, there goes Justin Hartwig's job. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, I mean,
wow.
Dude hit three guys in one play.
Max, let me ask you. Yeah. Was Hartwig still there? Was he still on the team, or had he moved on and Pouncey had to start?
No. He was still on the team. This was in training camp. And then Wig was cut in the final cuts. Of training camp. So yeah, this was an active game. I want to say this was either second or third preseason game. I couldn't remember which one, second or third, right before the fourth one, because they ended up having Pounce start that next preseason game after that game. So. And then it was apparent that now this is going to be the new starter. Like, he's ready to go.
Yeah.
And we didn't look back. Another guy I do want to point out, Wex, while you have your crack shot investigative team down there, Senior Bowl, Graham Barton. Yeah.
Barton. What's the first name?
Graham. He's Duke. He was a left tackle at Duke, but he's going to be playing center at the Senior Bowl. He's a guy like
okay.
You talk about a guy that's been. That's been touched by the nasty. That you would he qualifies as well, and he's one that might go on the radar because he played at Duke, and he can play five.
What's
positions,
ironic,
by the way,
there was like 140 years ago. There was a young guy out of Indiana State that played left tackle or played center, moved to tackle, mm-hmm. and he was had a lot of nasty in him too.
Oh yeah,
by the name of Tunch Ilkin.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Center/tackles have always been interesting to me.
Well, the funny part was when Tunch first got here and he said, you know, I got to move positions because Mike Webster ain't going nowhere for a while.
So it wasn't just a
forced
move
transition.
To maximize.
No, it was just like, I need to try something else because I'm never going to see the field.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you don't make a long career out of being backup center. Especially when you have a Hall of Famer sitting there entrenched in the prime years. That would be another guy I just put on your list there, Wex, of guys that are of people of note and of interest. Because he's a kid.
You know, I do believe I've read about him.
Okay.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just gonna say.
Go ahead.
You know, just through all of my college, you know, research and game calls, you know, you find different people as you're watching film, and you're like, I know I'm not calling the game against him because obviously I'm watching previous game film, but I was like, huh, that guy jumps off the screen.
Okay.
So yeah, so he's just one to note. I know they're starting to write more stuff about it because he's a left tackle switching to center for this All-Star game, but. He's a guy, I definitely had him on the list earlier this year of guy of interest. Had a little injury issue end of October, but came back, finished strong, and now he's in the Senior Bowl. So he'd just be another guy that I would just tuck in the pocket, you know, front pocket, not the back pocket.
Well, you know, centers need to be smart, right? Don't they need to be smarter than the other positions?
That's why I didn't play center, Wex.
You would like to believe that. Left tackle was a highly intelligent position, too, just in case anybody was wondering.
Left guards leech off the left tackles, that's all.
Well, Duke is a pretty a school for pretty smart guys, so, you know, maybe there's a correlation there. Some Duke brains.
Yeah, could be. Yeah, no, so yeah, just something to keep also in mind, you know, as we're going through the process. But no, Jackson's Power Johnson would be probably my top of my list, whether he's there or not by the time we would draft. that's another question, but yeah, definitely, I feel like interior OL, flexible OL in that position, a guy who could snap and also play in the phone booth. Would be a key of interest position that I would really like to see addressed in the draft this year. So, Wex, we appreciate it as always, sir. I mean, we held you a little bit longer than normal, but I feel like it's never really that long because we always just enjoy talking to you. So it's just
when Wex wants to talk about West Virginia players, he can stay as long as he wants.
Oh gosh, here we go.
You know, Wes, I was wondering why those guys didn't pick up on, you know. Max, I threw that out there, and Max lists his top six centers, doesn't mention WVU.
Well, you know, no respect for the Mountaineers is typical, Wex, you know? That's what we fight against all the time, you know?
You know, listen, if I got to draft a guy for a keg stand, I'm going West Virginia first, okay?
Well, obviously. I mean, come on. Yes, listen, Wex, I know all about the four-time high school state wrestling champion, Zach Frazier, who was the first Mountaineer true freshman to start on the offensive line since the 1970s, who when he came to WVU, we were averaging just 73 rush yards per game. When he left WVU, we had the number one Power 5 rushing offense in the country and the second least amount of sacks given up in the Power 5 as well. I don't know very much about Zach Frazier at all.
Sounds like you've been waiting to say all of that.
Well, to be fair, Wex, you know, we do these combine shows, and you've been kind enough to join us on Radio Row out there in Indianapolis before, and I'd like to have you again this year if we can book you, but I've been saving it for Indy, baby. I'm saving it for the combine.
Oh, my goodness.
Very cool. It was a great talk today, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, brother. All year long, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for all your contributions. We appreciate it. You've been one of our most consistent locker room invitees, so we do appreciate that. We don't take that for granted, Wex. Have a great off season, and we'll be talking soon down the line, man. Have a great rest of the day.
Hey, see you, boys.
Thank you, brother.
All right, that was Jim Wexel, like I said, the chief of Steel City Insider, and the author, not the Arthur. Also, you can catch his books and everything else at jimwexel.com. All right, we're going to step aside. We'll be back with more Inside the Locker Room, the Wolf segment, up next here on Fox Sports Pittsburgh and SNR Radio.
This is In the Locker Room with Wolf and Starks on Fox Sports Pittsburgh and Steelers Nation Radio. Presented by your neighborhood Ford store. The F-150 is the official truck of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Hi, my name is Esther Lou Wolfley. You're listening to In the Locker Room with my dad, Uncle Max, and the Ninjas on ESPN 970.
Oh, yeah, that's it. You know, that's perfect because –
I had to get the hero of the show today.
That's right.
That's right.
What people don't understand is I woke up this morning and my computer, like, just melted down or something. It's kaputs.
Did you spill coffee on it?
No, I didn't, actually. But here's the thing. You know, I get all my notes together because I'm working off my phone, you know, which is – that's hard enough because my screen's so small and everything. But anyhow, I come rushing to the station, right? I'm sitting here, all of a sudden I realize I got no notes. I left all my notes at home. I'm like, gadzooks, what am I going to do? And then, I'm talking to my wife, Faith, and she says, have Esther take pictures of your notes and then send them to CJ, who'll print them out. And voila, there you go. So Esther Lou saved the day along with CJ and a help from my dear wife, Faith. So they all came together to bring this show to you. So I'm grateful, thankful, and I'm going to finish up with this. Max, you know, one of the things that we talked about and I was never a big fan about, but everyone was always making a big deal of the fact that the Steelers didn't go over 400 total yards under Matt Canada. 44 total games, right? Didn't crack the 400-yard total once. And to me, it's always about, look, I'm not about the stat, you know, 400 yards, so what, as long as you're winning. Now, obviously, you're not winning all that. So the fact is, I can understand where it becomes more of a problem. But in 2 years with Smith, okay, the Titans went over 400 yards 15 times in 32 games, all right? In 2020, when he, let's see, oh, in 2023, he surpassed the magical 400 barrier 6 times in 2023 with the Falcons, you know? I mean,
yeah.
Hey, the guy is able and capable of putting up an offense.
Yeah, I mean, and first of all, let's say not all heroes wear capes.
Okay.
Let's just acknowledge that first. And
well, the Flash doesn't wear a cap. Hey, cape, you know.
Well, he does it, and your daughter was the Flash.
Oh, yes, yes.
So there you go, proving it. I was trying to give kudos.
I'm sorry. I was immediately thinking, okay, what's
your. Yeah, you're like, Aquaman doesn't have a cape, Flash, Captain America.
Dang it all.
Spider-Man doesn't
Iron
have a cape.
Man.
That's right.
Spider-Man. I mean, yeah.
Thor's got one,
exactly.
though.
Exactly. Thor does have an amazing cape.
Yeah.
And, you know, so Doctor Superman, Strange. Of course. Doctor Strange has his cape actually has a mind of its own, literally. So. Yeah. That makes his cape the best of all capes,
right?
Because of that, Wonder Woman does not have a cape. So yeah. Anywho, but no, but also Esther does not have a cape,
right?
And she's still a superhero in our eyes because she,
yes.
like she said, she saved the
saved
show.
The show. Way to go, Esther Liu.
Yes, yeah. So yeah, was giving a little praise to her. But yeah, you're right. I mean, talk about Arthur Smith, right? Getting to 400 yards offensively, and I think, you know. Not that we need that every single game, right? I mean,
right.
not every game dictates that.
No.
That depends on the opponent, the circumstances, and what we're doing. But you do
defense.
Want to see consistency.
Yeah.
You know, and like you said, defensively. But the best defense is a good offense because you're
right.
keeping those guys fresh on the sidelines so they can go attack. You know, you want your defense to act more like sprinters than marathon men. And that's any good team knows that that's what you have to do. Now, every once in a while, you'll be asked to run a little bit more than you plan to do. You know, you become a middle distance guy. Maybe I need you to hit a mile instead of just doing an 800. But that's what an offense – and I always talk about this. You know, when you're talking about what the integrity of a team is and why – you know, and this isn't from our bias, right, Wolf? I mean, we are offensive linemen.
Right.
But the offense and the offensive line more specifically – we're the cadence. We're the tempo and the heartbeat of the team.
Right.
Right? As we go, so shall everyone else go.
True.
And it rolls downhill. And it's a good hill to roll down. This is like one of those good sledding hills. You know, has about a pitch of about 30, 35 degrees. Nothing too crazy, but you can get a little speed, maybe get a little air if you got a little lip at the bottom of the hill. That's what you want. You know, you
a little lip at the bottom of the hill. Ski jump.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want Clark Griswold, you know, when he's spraying that what is it, grease lightning or whatever on the bottom of it, flying through. You don't want that.
The saucer, yes.
Yeah, the saucer. That was like frictionless. but you know, the offensive line, if you can control tempo, right? That's why we always harp on in the season, right? Time of possession.
Right.
And then one of the things that I learned and what was a part of my ethos when I played was points per time of production, right? You want to make sure that you're averaging a point a minute per time of production that you're on the field as an offense. That's the mark of staying on track. And you know what you're doing also with that? You're also helping your defense out. And you're allowing your defense to be fresh so that they can play absolutely at a flying speed. And you remember – we never get to come off the field as offensive linemen unless it's an injury.
Yeah.
It's almost like the Spartan rule, right?
And
you
even
know,
then.
Come back with your shield or arm.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And also, it better be a serious injury, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, if it's dirt in your eyes, that should be just a little timeout and a Gatorade squeeze bottle. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to hear hangnail. You know, first of all, you're either wearing gloves or you're taping up all your fingers, taping up all the available digits. But that's what, you know, you hope and you look at with that production, right? it might not, like I said, it won't be 400 yards, but if I'm grinding out time,
yeah,
if I'm taking those expertly appointed tailored shots in the game, if I look in control of the game for more than half of it, that's doing your job. And that's one of the things I think when we look back on the Steelers, we can't necessarily say too many times where they looked in control of the game from start to finish.
Right.
And I think you want to just change that perception first.
Good idea. I like that. You know, I mean, seriously, we talk about the fact that, you know, when you have time of possession, you have it all. I mean, as long as you're rolling those chains and able to create more offensive opportunities and keep your opponent on the bench and keep your defense fresh, all that comes around. And I look at this and I mean, again, taking a look at what he does with Arthur Smith in 2 years with the Titans, went over 400 yards 15 times in 32 games, 9 times in 2020. And the Falcons surpassed that magical 400 barrier 6 times last year in 2023. Obviously, he can create offense. He can create yardage. He can create move up in scoring as he has in other offenses. Again, to me, this is not, I hope, I don't know why anybody would want some sort of pinball type offense based largely on a passing game guru in Northeast football when he starts to get a little bit schmutzy, you know, come late October, early November. You know, I mean, that does, to me, it doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. I mean, but like you said, when you're talking about, you know, how you compete, you have to look at the division first, right?
Right.
You have to be able to say, okay, how do we stack up? Because that's the entryway.
Yes.
Yep. That's the entryway into playoff opportunities. And I believe the reason why we made the playoffs, what was that division record by the end of the year?
Yeah, we were 5-1.
We were 5-1. And I really question, who else was 5-1 in our division or better?
I don't think of anybody.
None.
That's right.
We had the best division record.
Thank you. Yeah, that's like a trick question.
Yeah, it was. We had one loss, and that was the Cleveland. We swept the other two.
Yeah.
Hello, Baltimore Ravens, who's sitting next to us right now watching other people play in the Super Bowl. And then, of course, Cincinnati Bengals. Hello. Hi, how you doing? Our name is the Steelers. So I think when you think of that, you have to build upon that.
No question.
And you have to be able to take that first step, and then you worry about starting to draw bigger circles outside of that, right? And even bigger circles. You know, you look at division first. You got to be able to dominate your division. Then you look at, okay, now we got to do conference.
Right.
Okay, now we have to do the entire schedule, which includes some cross-conference rivals and also some out of our determined division individuals that will be placed in. That's three of those. So you have to kind of draw the circle, then draw the next circle. But you have to focus on the inner circle first, right?
Yep.
You got to focus on the main seed. The main seed is the divisional opponents. That's 6 of your games. That's 6 out of 17. And those matter. Those matter when you're talking about how do we prep for the next phase. And especially when a bulk of those games are going to come later in the year. They're not going to come early in the year. They're not going to front load your division games. And especially with the AFC North and us being the only division that finished with every team above 500, that's going to be appointment, you know, possible flex scheduling TV. And you think about the quarterbacks that are in this division, right? Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, and whoever Cleveland rolls out there. You know, they have like 17 quarterbacks apparently. but the Steelers are right smack dab in the middle of that. And you know, yes, we'll have to figure out how it goes looking forward. You know, if you're able to retain a Mason or not, KP is the guy, KP8. And then you work from there, whether it's we have to go get a guy in the draft, you have to go trade for a free agent if you can't get Mason back. Like, there's a lot of different variables that you have to be aware of, but it really starts with division dominance first, precedes anything. That's what Mike Tomlin said to us for my first 6 years,
yeah.
And he still says that today. Division dominance precedes anything else.
There you go. All right, my good man, we're going to go to break because when we come back, Max is up with the bell lap right here in the locker room.
We'll
This is In the Locker Room with Wolf and Starks on Fox Sports Pittsburgh and Steelers Nation Radio, presented by your neighborhood Ford store. The F-150 is the official truck of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
It's bell lap time here inside the locker room.
Wow, that got rung a lot.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, it did. And that's your midweek early lunch warning signal. That's right. We are within the final 10 minutes before you need to be foraging like we will be doing after this show, except for Wes. Wes has to work still.
Did find a bag of Cool Ranch Doritos in the kitchen, at least.
Oh, a little fun size bag. So full disclosure there. You just mentioned the Cool Ranch Doritos. The only reason why is the final episode. We only have a couple minutes, so I can
squirrel it up, baby. Let's go.
That's right. I can take the squirrel. I can wrangle it. I exposed my daughters last week and my wife to walking tacos.
Ooh.
Have you heard of walking tacos?
I have. Yeah. What kind of bag did it come in? The Frito-Lay one?
No. We did it with the Cool Ranch Doritos. I went and got some of the smaller bags. We did Cool Ranch and Nacho Cheese Doritos.
Ooh.
And every Tuesday is always taco night. So, except for last night. Last night I had a volleyball duty since I wasn't doing my SXM late show. Because they're down at Senior Bowl.
Okay.
So I was off this week. So I went and took my daughter to volleyball practice. So we had to go a little pre-made. We went with just some broccoli and some five cheese lasagna.
Ooh, nice.
So I made it easy. Took like 30 minutes to do start to finish. So I was like, make it easy on Dad, because Dad normally, like, I cook the meat separate. I make a big pot of yellow rice. I do usually a refried black bean or refried pinto beans with it. You do the whole taco bar accoutrements, you know, the fresh salsa and all that kind of stuff. So, and then the girls love taco boats.
sounds good.
Yeah. So last week I was like, you know what? Let's change it up. Because Quincy was like, Daddy, I would love to just, you know, crush up some Doritos and just sprinkle it on top and make it almost like a nacho almost, but like a nacho dust. So I was like, sweetie, I have something even better. We'll crush up those Doritos in the bag, and you can dump all your ingredients inside of it, stir it up, and you can eat it out of the bag. She's like, what? Mind blown. So I buy four bags, and I just remember, you know, and I'm doing my show, so.
And by the way, did you have the large for you? Yeah, large bag, huh?
I did not. I withheld. And, okay. And listen, if you know me, you know that I am never a lightweight, fun size bag type of guy when it comes to my Dorito, you know,
consumption.
Aficionado or consumption.
Yes.
And so it was really hard to kind of pull back on that, because nothing better than Cool Ranch Doritos. You know, I had a long talk with my wife when she was like, "Well, yeah, Doritos are showing this retro. Why are they showing the retro nacho cheese?" And I was like, you have to remember, the original was taco-flavored Doritos. That's how it was introduced before we got the nacho cheese flavor, which I feel like has just been now taken over the moniker for what you know as standard Doritos. But back in the day, we had the little clear view window where you could see in and see how much you consumed back when they filled, you know, bags of chips and other snacks to the top before they started giving you that half a bag of air. So I was like, that was the first flavor.
Sounds
like,
personal.
That makes
sense. Sounds personal.
Retro. Yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah. Listen, this is something near and dear to my heart, Wolf. you know, and we went almost the whole show without talking about food. So I felt it was only necessary that we just kind of go overdrive at the end of it. But they had it. And my wife looked at me after she finished the first bag, and she was looking at the bottom of the bag, and it was interesting. She's like, why didn't you buy more? I was like, what? We hadn't done this. She was like, well, you should have known that we would have all wanted two bags of Doritos. I'm like, I'm sorry. I'll buy the box of the fun pack of chips to make sure that we have more Doritos next time, because they don't just sell a straight Dorito bag. You got to get some of the Lay's stuff in there too. So I was like, so now I know my family loves walkie tacos. And Wes, thank you for bringing that up, that you found some Cool Ranch Doritos.
You know what?
It just sparked the mind.
Speaking of food things here real quick before we go, my apologies. I teased you guys
with how I was making
cheesesteaks on the Blackstone with the fresh Philly rolls.
Right.
And I made this dinner last night, and we got so excited. And you know what? I even stopped, and I got some shaved chicken breast too. So we did cheesesteaks and chicken cheesesteaks both. And I got so excited, and we were so hungry. I forgot that my phone was supposed to eat first, and I didn't take a single picture.
Wow.
And then my wife and I are cleaning up after we put the kids to bed. And I go, oh, babe, crap. I was supposed to take a picture for Max and Wolf. Yeah, she goes, well, we'll have to do it again next week, I guess, or something.
Well, you know what? Dad's going to have to pull out all the stops and cook tonight, and I think I will because I'll get Five Guys.
I thought a Caliente joke was coming.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, maybe we'll go to Caliente's. There you go.
Oh,
he's been
my
slaving
gosh.
Over this meal for hours, Max.
Exactly. By slaving, just thinking about it.
That'd be the
prisoner
truth.
Of his mind. He can't get it out. He can't get it out.
Right now, the good lady Faith is going, I wonder what he's thinking he's going to do.
Yeah, how keto does he think that option really is?
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my God. That is too funny. Well, all right. Well, we are at the end of the show. Of course, as always, a pleasure, Mr. Craig Wolfley. That's right, the patriarch of this show inside the locker room.
In other words, that's the word for synonymous with old.
Seasoned
veteran.
Seasoned. Well aged, like wine, like fine wine.
Like a nice prime rib, nice dry aged.
A little dry age, you know. I mean, you'd appreciate that, right, Wolf? You don't want
no
to
just
get fresh kill, throw it on the grill. You want to dry age that thing. Make sure it's primed up perfectly. A little salt and pepper, a little S&P, perfect.
As long as it's dead, that's all.
You mean you don't throw a whole cow on an open spit? No.
No.
No. No. And of course, myself, I'm the Robin of this show. I'm Mr. Max Starks, and of course, we have Cato. AKA Wes Euler. You know, he definitely helps us.
Thought I was the Joker.
At times.
You're a jokester, but not necessarily Joker. Hey, big bang boom. And of course we have CJ, AKA Squirrel Wrangler Supreme, AKA Gremlin Hunter himself. And of course Master Splinter, AKA our sensei Brian LaMartina, always keeping us in check and in place. In fact, we appreciate it. Yes, we did run into your family, and his family was on the platform, apparently, with Bill Cowher.
Oh, my
God. Wondering. So that's why you don't hear Brian, is because he had to go post bail. Anyways. Oh, my goodness. Well, it's been fun. Hey, make sure you go out and make it a great day. We'll be back tomorrow on the same Black and Gold channel, same Black and Gold time.
If everyone has lemonade stands, I think we can do it. These inspiring words were expressed by Alex Scott, the little girl who was battling childhood cancer and decided to have a lemonade stand in her own backyard to help fundraise for a cure. In honor of Alex and everyone fighting this disease, join S&T Bank June 1st through the 8th at all bank branches for Lemonade Days. Enjoy treats and activities. Help us support research, awareness, and hope for these children and families in need. Let's make people our purpose and build a brighter future together. S&T Bank, member FDIC.